Hello, this is Sharon. I'm welcoming you to the reading for the Pantograph. Today is Wednesday, February 11th, 2026. We'll begin our reading on the front page with an article entitled Local Business, Super Bowl for Florists. Local businesses spend months prepping for Valentine's Day. Business for Bloomington Normal florists and garden shops bursts into full bloom for Valentine's Day, but the seeds were planted months ago. "We do 2 months of business in 1 week," Christy Moore, owner of Forget Me Not Flowers and Beck's Family Florist at 1208 Tawanda Avenue in Bloomington, said with a smile, "Our Super Bowl is Valentine's Day." Weeks of preparation include ordering inventory, coming up with new arrangements, and calling in additional help to deal with the influx of orders. In addition to cut flowers, Valentine's Day merchandise also can range from plants and chocolates to sushi and dog treats. So the prep work starts 6 months in advance, ordering all the processes, and then the nuts and bolts start, said Kristen Laughlin, floral and catering manager at Hy-Vee, 1403 North Veterans Parkway in Bloomington. As for the flowers, they come from all over. Employees started processing the incoming flowers the first week of February, bringing in a refrigerated trailer, she said. Although they see orders for flowers like carnations and chrysanthemums, red roses still dominate the holiday, the local florist said. At Hy-Vee, Laughlin said sales range anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 roses. And Moore anticipates her store will also sell more than 1,500 roses during the week of Valentine's Day. But with a full grocery store available, Hy-Vee also pairs flower arrangements with items like candy, soda, bakery items, balloons, stuffed animals, and more. "Last year, I made Stanley arrangements using the stainless steel tumbler cups as vases," Laughlin said. "They sold like hotcakes, putting flowers with Stanleys. This year, one of our specials is a small Love by the Dozen. It's a dozen small roses with sushi." Moore, who also owns Uptown Gifts and Accessories in Normal, said one of her favorite things to do during the Valentine's Day season is putting together baskets with items from her gift shop to enrich the flower arrangements made by Penny Westfall, a 50-year veteran of the floral field. Bill Inks, owner of AB Hatchery and Garden Center in Bloomington, said Valentine's Day is not a major holiday for his business as he doesn't sell cut flowers, but he still expects to see 40 to 50 orders this week. For AB Hatchery, plants, chocolates, and even dog treats are popular for Valentine's Day, he said. "Dogs like to celebrate Valentine's and people love their pets, dogs and cats," Inks said. AB Hatchery partners with Caitlin Snyder, owner of the Maple Barkery, who makes custom dog treats, including this year's Valentine's Day treats that also coincide with Dental Health Month for dogs. The Garden Center also sells baskets with pet treats, chocolates from the Monac Chocolate Company, and Valentine's Day plant arrangements for those who would prefer not to have cut flowers. "We like to support the local companies when we can," Inks said. Forget Me Not will also be selling arrangements featuring chocolates from Downtowner by Abdallah Candies of Minnesota, which Moore said she began selling after the chocolatier in Bloomington closed its doors in 2024. As a part of national floral dealer Teleflora, Moore said her store gets access to all kinds of really cool things, including rainbow roses. Laughlin said for Valentine's Day, getting orders out takes a village, and Hy-Vee pulls managers from different areas to come in and help. Deliveries from Hy-Vee close at 2 p.m. on February 14th. Inks agreed, noting he calls in additional seasonal help during his major holidays, including Mother's Day and Christmas, to help prepare orders and take out deliveries. At Forget Me Not, Moore said the holiday is a family affair with her children, friends, sisters, and her sister's friends coming together to help prepare orders on the big day. Delivery orders end at noon on Valentine's Day. It will be a well-oiled machine here, Moore said. City of Bloomington, $610,000 planned for city project. Federal money for housing infrastructure. The City of Bloomington is expecting to invest $610,000 in 2026 for housing and development projects eligible for federal funding under the Community Development Block Grant Program. The Community Development Block Grant is an annual allocation of funding from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development to meet one of three goals: to benefit low to moderate income individuals, to meet urgent community needs, and to prevent or eliminate slum or blight conditions. Based on a four-year average, the city anticipates $555,000 in funding this year, plus another $38,000 of income from old housing rehabilitation loans and $17,000 from prior year resources. The use of these funds must be outlined in an annual action plan, which was presented during a public hearing at Monday's City Council meeting. William Bessler, Grants Manager for Bloomington's Community Impact and Enhancement Department, said the city plans to invest $320,000 in housing rehabilitation services and another $32,000 toward residential housing demolition. However, there will not be any sidewalk improvements this project year. We are working with the engineering department to evaluate future opportunities for that funding, as it was identified as a critical priority in the Bloomington 2025 through 2029 consolidated plan, Bessler said. Another $84,000 would support several public service activities. $29,000 would go toward a street outreach program for Home Sweet Home Ministries. $27,000 would go toward a financial empowerment program through KTB Financial Services. $13,000 would go toward a housing services program from Prairie State Legal Services, and $15,000 would go toward community operations of the West Bloomington Revitalization Project. Planning work and ensuring that the grant program is administered effectively and proficiently would cost another $94,000. Playground updates at Wood Hill Family Apartments would also be done for $80,000. Alderman Michael Mosley asked whether the city has a contingency if the grant funds aren't released on time. Cordero Patrick, Director of Community Impact and Enhancement for the city, said there have been times where the city's general fund will cover expenses and then be reimbursed once HUD releases the funding. However, he doesn't anticipate this happening. "We always believe they're going to send us the money," Patrick said. A request for proposals for eligible projects was released last November and remained open until January 5th. A total of 10 applications requesting about $1.1 million were received. 8 applications for public service and administration, and 2 applications for public facility and infrastructure improvements. A public comment period for the annual action plan will be open until February 23rd. The city reserves the right to make changes to the draft plan once the actual allocation amount of it is provided by HUD. Additional changes could also be made during the submission process. The City Council would then act on the plan. HUD would then review the expenditures and release the funds. In other business, the Council also agreed to extend an agreement with Thorn Run Partners, a Washington, D.C.-based public relations firm, to provide professional lobbying services for another 3 years for a total cost of $288,000. The original contract was approved in February 2023, despite reservations from some council members who felt that advocating for federal funding should rest in the hands of Bloomington's congressional representatives. However, as a result of this partnership, the city has received $4 million in federal funding for the Hamilton Road Corridor and Locust-Colton Combined Sewer Separation Project since 2024. Another $1.7 million is under consideration in the fiscal 2026 federal appropriations legislation for the East Street Basin and the Bloomington Police Department Real-Time Crime Center. Alderman Mike Straza voiced concerns about the length of the contract and the council's ability to opt out of it. Bloomington City Manager Jeff Juergens said the agreement can be terminated with 30 days' notice. Fired Up film series examines AIDS issues. Illinois State University's Queer Coalition is hosting its second annual film series highlighting the AIDS crisis and the activism it inspired, bringing together history, art, and community dialogue through a curated lineup. Not only do I think that it's vital to remember those people and their stories, but I also see a chilling parallel between the struggles of them and what we're currently facing today with trans people being vilified by both our government and most of the public, said Bree Byers, multimedia specialist at ISU and co-president of the coalition. I think it really is a very illuminating film series that also has something to say about what we're facing. Fired Up, the American AIDS Crisis on Film, will run from February 11th through March 4th at the Normal Theater, 209 West North Street. Screenings are free and open to the public. They will take place at 7 p.m. for the next 4 Wednesdays. The series looks at how filmmakers have documented the AIDS epidemic while also capturing the anger, resistance, and organizing that emerged in response to widespread stigmas and government inaction, Byers said. Each screening will include a brief introduction from faculty members and community leaders to provide historical and cultural context. Carmine Beecroft, a Digitization Center coordinator at Milner Library and co-president of the coalition, said the coalition is an LGBTQIA+ affinity group for Illinois State University faculty, staff, and graduate students. Not only has the coalition organized the film series, but it also hosts a variety of events and programs throughout the year, including a series of talks coordinated with the university's Women, Gender, and Sexuality Study Program to discuss issues of interest in the community. The coalition also hosts the annual Transgender Day of Visibility, which is an opportunity for transgender, gender nonconforming, and non-binary members and allies across the university and across the community to come together. And more recently, at the end of last year, the organization helped same-sex couples learn how to establish medical powers of attorney in light of the U.S. Supreme Court putting same-sex marriage on its docket again, Beecroft said. Beecroft said the coalition was founded in 2021 by a group of faculty members and other community leaders bringing together faculty, staff, and graduate students. Before that, a former faculty and staff affinity group known as the Triangle Association formed in 1998 before folding in 2019. The Fired Up film series opens Wednesday, February 11th with Buddies, directed by Arthur J. Brezen Jr. Released in 1985, it's considered the first narrative film to address the AIDS crisis. This film focuses on the friendship between a volunteer and a hospitalized AIDS patient, offering an intimate portrayal of care and connection during those early days of the epidemic. On February 18th, the theater will screen United in Anger, A History of ACT UP, directed by Jim Hubbard. This 2012 documentary chronicles the rise of the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, or ACT UP, and its use of direct action to demand medical research, access to treatment, and accountability from government and pharmaceutical companies. The February 25th program features three short films by Marlon Riggs, a Black gay filmmaker, educator, poet, and activist, and that will include Affirmations, Anthem, and No, Je ne regrette rien. Riggs' work explores race, sexuality, and resistance, centering Black LGBTQIA+ experiences that were often marginalized during the height of the AIDS crisis. These three short films were released in early 1990. The series concludes on March 4th with Poison, directed by Todd Haynes, a landmark film from 1991 during the queer cinema movement. The screening coincides with the Normal Theater's horror series and examines fear, desire, and social panic through three interconnected storylines. Byers said, in a time when LGBTQIA+ individuals and rights are under attack, it is vital to remember these people and their stories while understanding the parallels between the struggles they faced and what the community is facing today. I'd say this film series is a 101 course on the topic of AIDS circa the 80s and 90s. And I think it'll be a very educational and illuminating event for people, she said. Beecroft said even though LGBTQIA+ education is required in schools across the state, a lot of school districts still do not follow through with educating students. Having grown up without learning much about the community, history, or notable individuals, they had to teach themselves and discover the similarities between people they finally resonated with, Beecroft said, noting for many, those who attend the film series, this could be the first time they encounter these stories and parallels. We had a lot of students here who had never seen these films, had never thought about what the community looked like in the 90s, and I think this will be introducing a lot of folks from that age bracket, Beecroft said. This is an opportunity to see these films as they would have premiered in a theater on the big screen, and a lot of them aren't easily available elsewhere. Visit queercoalition.illinoisstate.edu for more information about the coalition and their film series. Today's Flick Fact question: can you name the two most popular months in 2025 to have a baby in Illinois? And the answer is, from the Illinois Hospital Network, it's July. July 2025 was identified as the busiest month for births in Illinois facilities, followed closely by September. September is annually the busiest month of the year for birth, according to Illinois Department of Public Health statistics, largely, they say, because of the number of conceptions that happen during the December holiday season. And from the back pages of the Pantograph, how time flies locally. 100 years ago, on February 11th, 1926, Bloomington has landed another important industry. Negotiations, which have been in progress for several months, were finally concluded. Tyree Automobile Radiator Manufacturing Company of Chicago has agreed to move to the Evergreen City and will be located in the plant of the Illinois Tractor Company on East Lincoln Street. 75 years ago, on February 11, 1951, no comment. That's all that Paul Harvey would say on February 10th about his fence climbing episode this week at the Argonne Laboratories. He spoke here at the 50th Annual Association of Commerce banquet at the Scottish Rite Temple. The Chicago Radio News commentator declared that those two words are the toughest speech in the world. Mr. Harvey wouldn't even tell a Pantograph reporter how old he is. 50 years ago, February 11th, 1976. It doesn't look very good. Nothing has really changed. That was Bernard J. Grosso's comment on February 11th on the subject of contract talks between the Eureka Company and the 1,700 Eureka factory employees represented by Grosso and Lodge 1000 of the International Association of Machinists. And 25 years ago today, on February 11th, 2001, local bee enthusiasts met on February 10th at the McLean County Farm Bureau in Bloomington for a workshop. Attendees said they went to learn the basics of beekeeping and keep up with current information. Honeybees tend to be extremely gentle. They are a good choice for a hobby, said the editor of an Area Beekeepers Association newsletter. Judge finds man guilty of robbery. A Tennessee man has been found guilty in a bench trial of robbing a Bloomington McDonald's at gunpoint in October 2023 and fleeing from the police. Marcus T. Folks, 43, of Jackson, Tennessee, appeared in court on February 5th and February 6th for a scheduled bench trial before Judge Jason Chambers, who found him guilty of armed robbery, a Class X felony, aggravated robbery with a firearm, a Class 1 felony, and aggravated fleeing causing bodily injury, a Class 4 felony, aggravated fleeing causing damage, a Class 4 felony, and two additional counts of aggravated fleeing, both Class 4 felonies. A McDonald's employee told police a man, later identified as Folks, pulled up to a drive-thru at the restaurant on South Main Street, pointed a gun at her, and demanded money from the register, prosecutors said. Following the robbery, police located the vehicle believed to have been used in the robbery and saw the driver commit several traffic violations. prosecutors said at his initial appearance hearing. Police attempted to stop the vehicle, but the driver sped onto Interstate 55 and continued onto westbound I-74 before taking the exit at Carlock, traveling on U.S. Route 150 and ultimately crashing into a farm field in rural Normal Township, prosecutors said. Folks reached speeds topping 110 miles per hour. After he crashed, he ran from the scene before officers caught him. Police officers searching the vehicle found $158, matching what was taken from McDonald's register, prosecutors said. Later, a bicyclist found a gun on Fox Creek Road, which was along the route taken by the driver, and it matched the description of the gun used in the robbery, prosecutors said. Folks represented himself during his bench trial, and the prosecution was represented by Assistant State's Attorney Spencer Chickahisa. Folks is scheduled for a sentencing hearing at 1:30 p.m., on March 27th. The Pantograph has a commitment to accuracy and wants you to tell them about any issues regarding accuracy and fairness. You can contact them at 309-820-3242 or email ojacobs@pantograph.com. And to set it right, Week in Illinois, the president of the Central Illinois District of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, has been charged with possessing child sex abuse materials. Part of the suspect's title was omitted from an article that appeared on page A4 of Saturday's edition of the Pantograph. Grant applications open for emergent needs. Applications for the John M. Scott Healthcare Commission's Fiscal 2027 Emergent Need Grant Cycle are being accepted through February 27th. This special funding is intended to address urgent or newly identified health-related needs that aren't fully met by existing services. Funding would also align with the John M. Scott Healthcare Trust's mission of improving healthcare access to low-income McLean County residents, particularly in response to economic and community challenges. This category of funding is reserved for smaller, targeted, or time-sensitive projects, but it may also be used to help organizations build capacity or test new solutions that could expand into larger programming. The request for proposal and application materials are available via a banner link on the City of Bloomington's website. Visit bloomingtonil.gov. We'll take a short break now, and then I'll return with the second half of the Pantograph for February 11th, 2026. Please stay tuned.